It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome in to the Scotty Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett himself, Scotty Johnny, and with me, as per usual, is Aaron Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man?
Not a great deal, but we are getting ready for one of the most wonderful times of the year, generally speaking, but also the only thing left for us in this COVID world in terms of sports. We got the NFL draft coming up, and we're very excited for that to come on. And we are going to talk a couple positions that are going to be very key for the Packers first probably three rounds that we're going to be looking at. But beyond that, too, I want everybody to just know, of course, that you can follow this podcast on Twitter at ScottyJohnnyPod. You can follow me at NotSoHumbleHost. And Aaron, I believe they can follow you. Where would they follow you?
They would follow me at Cheddar Talk, John. That is my Twitter account. Address thing.
No,
I have another ghost one too that I've been using more recently, which is getting more followers than my actual Cheddar Talk is. But we won't mention that one on this publication.
That's fine. It's quite literally a nom de guerre, as you are picking fights with as many people as you can, it seems. But I do want to put out a thank you to everybody. I was recently in a with a friend of the podcast, Megan Schrader, the was it Brewers Twitter bracket that was created over there. I made it out of the first two rounds and got into the Sweet 16. So thank you for all my Twitter followers and everybody who did vote for me. Ended up losing to Megan herself, who was, I believe, the 8th seed, and I was the 24th. I mean, it was seeded entirely the whole way, so she's technically like a 2 seed if you were doing a regular 4 bracket challenging.
Right.
But yeah, I was 24th and she was 8th. I beat the 9th seeded team and got into that spot. So I felt very good about it, and thank you again to everybody who voted for me. Last couple of things I'll say is, remember, of course, you can follow this show on, you know, iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and much, much more. Wherever you do listen to us, please remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. Those 5-star reviews do help other people to find the podcast and help us get the word around and have everyone else into the madness that is this show. Right, Aaron?
Right.
So there's the madness that is this show. Aaron
Flott. Oh, sorry. No, I was I'm sorry.
No, I got the madness.
Way late. No, I was just on the Twitter feeds on the at Cheddar Talk, and I didn't see this one before. We can talk about this later. It was a 3-stadium solution for baseball to play that includes Texas. I hadn't seen that until this very moment. I was trying to find something else, and this popped up, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. All roofed stadiums. So
yeah. All right.
Anyhow. All right.
With that, we will get everything kicked off with what we lovingly call our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right, Aaron, we got obviously draft talk. We talked about that already up front. The one thing that I do want to add here in terms of other football news is the Chicago Bears cut Trey Burton, tight end Trey Burton. They picked him up a couple years ago from Philadelphia, where he had a very good year leading into the Super Bowl run that made him a lot of money. I mean, he did very well in that season and came to the Bears and immediately got injured. It's not something I like to see. He's missed a bunch of time in the last, you know, 2 years now here with the Bears, and then was cut, presumably to save money. But, I mean, like, this team just went out and signed Jimmy Graham. They still do have,
they have 10 tight ends on their roster right now anyway. So, yeah. I mean, they're obviously, by letting Trey Burton go, that frees up some cap space. That way they can draft at least 3 or 4 more tight ends. And then they can roll into the season trying to decide if they want to carry 12 or 11 tight ends and then fullback. onto the roster.
Yeah, and they do have Shaheen, who they just picked up recently. I mean, he was drafted. I think he was drafted last year. He's a good athletic guy. I really like him, too. I think, seriously, still, even with the injuries recently, Trey Burton, I think, is probably the best tight end they had. I get they're trying to save money and these things like that. The other thing is, obviously, nobody else has picked him up. I haven't seen him getting picked up anywhere in the meantime, partially because getting cut right before the draft is the worst time to get cut, because everyone's going to wait to see where the draft falls.
Right.
But you're not drafting anybody in this draft who's Trey Burton. This is not a good tight end draft. There's nobody of any particular note in that.
You think they would have like tried to hold on to him for like a sixth or a seventh round draft pick or something like that, right? Like anything? Well,
the Bears are going to move up, you know, one spot to pick a quarterback, probably. And you figure they could, you know, dangle Trey Burton.
Why would
they
want to pick a quarterback? They just used the top 10 pick a couple of years ago on Mitch Trubisky. He's the future, man.
You pick a top 2 pick. They were the third. No, either way, I just like the idea that they would waste draft capital to move up a single spot because, you know, nobody else is drafting against them.
I hope they do. I hope they do. I really hope they do. I hope they make all the wrong decisions.
I do, too. I always root against the Bears and the Vikings and the Lions being smart. I'll say, though, that the Bears have drafted very well.
The Lions are never smart. The Bears are rarely smart. Sometimes the Vikings are smart. But, again, you know, as there was OBJ talk going to the Vikings, it's like how they can't. They have no money to put him on their roster.
Yeah, they
like,
can't afford it. They don't have
stop
the ability to do
talking
that.
About that. They won't be able to sign their own draft picks if they bring him on. But
they,
yes,
they would have to trade away their entire offensive line or something. You know, just get rid of all of them. Just
draft a new offensive line and just bring it OBJ.
Just keep a center to snap the ball and then just immediately throw it to somebody else. It's like,
it'd be like 7-on-7 in high school. That was the best. Unless you were the center.
Yeah. In fairness, I mean, like the Packers obviously think Sternberger's the guy that they're going to be keeping in the long run. They like Tanyan. They're going to do something with those two guys. Lewis is a guy who they're keeping in the short run. Their longer goals are with Sternberger and Tanyan. I mean, I understand not going after Burton here in this position. I would really have no problem if they signed him, depending on the amount they paid, but I get it entirely, and I'm not advocating they go get him.
And we're all just hoping that Robert Tonyan, that was the sophomore slump that happens with tight ends and wide receivers last year. That was kind of what happened. Now, you can be scared that next year will be the sophomore slump for Sternberger, but, I mean, you know, it's not worth it. Besides that, stop swapping spit within the NFC North. Go outside. go find another one somewhere else, not the guy from down the lake. It's just, okay. I mean, that would be 2 years in a row that we got they got Haha and we got brain fart.
Oh, we got Amos.
Then now they're gonna get Graham and we're gonna take Burton. That it's just no, stop it.
It's kind of a horse apiece at that point either too.
It's like dating the girl from the town next door. Don't do it. Just go a couple counties over. Most of Wisconsin knows what that is, John. It's not all of us live in the South. Well, I do now.
Jeez. Yeah, way down there. All right.
Picking rocks in Rock County.
Yeah. All right. So we have a couple things that we wanted to go over here just to try to give, I guess, we're not just a draft type of podcast. We're trying to get people information. And I guess the way that you and I tend to approach this in our third year of trying to look at this stuff is say, you know, here's guys you're going to be looking at. These are the names you're going to hear in the first several rounds. And here's some people to be interested in and keep in your mind. So you're not going to be surprised by a lot of things. And you'll kind of have an idea kind of where you want to look at, too, as we give you ideas on some of these people and kind of where we're going. Three big areas we wanted to focus on here. And Aaron and I have pulled up a bunch of numbers and kind of centralized them for ourselves so we can try to refer to them here. Wide receiver, inside linebacker, and offensive line, most likely tackle. Mm-hmm. We want to start with wide receivers because that seems to be the most likely position. I mean, it's the biggest position of need if you're drafting need. And again, Andy Herman, if you follow him at Andy Herman NFL on Twitter, you do know this. Like, you don't draft for need. I mean, you draft for value. Sometimes you have to include the idea that you have needs and you want to fill those needs with the draft.
Right.
But you're drafting not just for next year, generally speaking. You're drafting to make sure your team has the best talent in order to be more effective as you continue down whatever, I mean, down your line here. You figure everybody on the Packers staff believes they're coming back next year, regardless of what this year's numbers look like. Mm-hmm. So you draft to have a better team as you go. That being said, there's a lot of value in the wide receiver group now because the wide receiver group is good.
Right. Unlike the year, I'm going to take another shot at the Vikings. So you talk about drafting for need instead of drafting for talent. Laquon Treadwell, they took him in the first, when they took, well, him and Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah.
You know, those were two people that, I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson's turned out to be a decent returner in the long run and a shifty back for whatever team he plays for. But, I mean, that is the quintessential drafting for need. And they reached because they panicked. We need a wide receiver in the first round. Rawr! And they didn't. And they wasted a first-round draft pick. What was the 1 year they had three first-round draft picks and none of them made it past year four with the Vikings? Like, because they were drafting for need, you know? So you're absolutely right in that. So, I mean, but you still got to, at the same time, I mean, you got to kind of focus in on, I mean, the antithesis of that was when they took Aaron Rodgers at number 24. They didn't need a quarterback, but the best talent in the draft fell in their lap, and they did, and it worked out in the long run. You know, it caused some problems along the way. It got them a Super Bowl title, but, you know, it is what it is. So, I mean, but at the same time, you kind of got to keep your mind on what the picture in front of you. So, I mean, obviously need wide receiver, but I mean, talk about it, John. Go through it. Go.
Loving this. I'm going back through that draft, the 2016 draft in which the Vikings picked up Laquon Treadwell. You know,
there was three good wide receivers taken in the second and third round. I know that.
Sterling Shepard, Michael Thomas, and Tyler Boyd.
There you go.
Boyd, we're all on the board. And you're just like,
done. But Laquon Treadwell was one of the big three wide receivers because the other two that were taken ahead of him were also,
there were three of them, Fuller, Doctson, and Corey Coleman.
I feel like we talked about this like 4 weeks ago.
That was a very good draft to have some of these things because like I ended up in a dynasty league that year where I worked out to have like four or three first round picks and then a couple second rounds. And then, in that draft, I picked up, Zeke Elliott and Will Fuller and Michael Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that ain't
a bad pull.
That's a good one.
Well, Fuller's the worst one out of the bunch just because you can't count on him from week to week.
Yeah, just
because
he gets hurt so much.
Derek 200 Henry yards, 200 yards, round? 0 yards, 200 yards, 0 yards, 200 yards.
Yeah, geez. A lot of other talent they had there, and they didn't go after a ton of it there. So it's, drafting for
there's something about like right after Laquon Treadwell, like a pick or two after him, or it was a really good player too. I forget what it was, but
let me see. I've got it up here. So Artie Burns, Paxton Lynch, Kenny Clark. Kenny Clark was there.
Right.
Joshua Garnett, that's the year the Patriots had no first round pick.
For Spygate, yeah.
Jermaine Ifedi to the Seahawks, he's been all right.
It was Kenny Clark. Like they could have taken Kenny Clark to be right next to Danielle Hunter on the front. Could you imagine those two next to each other?
Oh, that'd be terrible. Yeah.
That would be it. Unstoppable. Unstoppable.
I mean, seriously, the second round has like Xavier Howard, Miles Jack, Hunter Henry, Jalen Smith.
That was the draft when the Packers took Kenny Clark, and thank God he worked out because otherwise we would have never forgiven them for letting Miles Jack get past them. That's right. So, no, good thing Kenny Clark worked out because if it would have been a bust, it would have been Miles Jack was there.
Yeah. So the one thing that we're going to take into, we're just assuming at this point is that Ruggs and Jared Judy and CeeDee Lamb are all going to be off the board. When he's Big Jerry Judy, Judy, I always want to call him Doug Judy because Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a funny show, and I love Doug Judy as a character.
No, I thought you were referring to Judge Judy, but anyways.
No. Doug Judy. Doug Judy, the Pontiac Bandit.
I've seen that show like twice. I laugh every time I watch it, but this house is dominated by children's programming.
Yeah, it's on Hulu. It's on the Hulu. No,
I'm sure it is.
No, I watch every episode.
We waste all of our time with Guy's Grocery Games, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, that's good. So yeah, there's still a list of several people, once you go past those three bigger names, that are going to be likely close to being available to Packers. Some of them are probably going to come off the board. You don't know how they are, but it's going to be somewhere around this. The guys we're looking at are guys like Jalen Reagor from TCU, Michael Pittman Jr. from USC, Justin Jefferson we've talked about before, Brandon Ayuk, Denzel Mims, and Chase Claypool we've talked about plenty over the last couple weeks now, too. Mm-hmm. As we said, Claypool is a guy, some people are saying, like, if you pick him, the Packers might think he could be a tight end. That dude is 6'4", 238. That's small to be a tight end, but
yeah,
big guy. His RAS score is off the charts, 9.98. That's almost a perfect relative athletic score. 4.42 40. The dude has a vertical jump of 40.5 inches. That's tremendous. He didn't do three-cone drill or 20-yard shuffles. Shuffles. That would be
nobody
fun.
And nobody cares.
Yeah, nobody does care because his RAS is incredible at that point. Other guys... And the reason we bring up RAS, we've talked about this in the last couple of weeks, but the reason we bring it up is a lot of people use it now, and one of the people who really loves it is Gutekunst. If you just look at his drafts, the only way you believe that he picks some of these guys over others, and some, a lot of them have worked out, is because you believe that the RAS score was way higher in some of these guys, especially as you get later in the draft. He loves himself some athleticism. Some of the other best ones here, Justin Jefferson, the LSU kid, 4.43. He's 6'1", you know, 202. He has a 9.69 RAS. Denzel Mims, the kid out of Baylor, 9.76. Now,
And the Jefferson kid, like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know everything. As if you listen to this podcast week to week, you know that I'm not. I don't subscribe to that. But I mean, he looked. I did watch the national championship game though, and he looked good in the national championship game.
He runs well. He's played in big games. I mean, the one thing you can say though is he had the best quarterback in this college, you know, system. Well, one of the two, unless Tua got hurt, obviously.
Right.
But he's one of those two guys. He had that going for him as well. But his ability to run after the ball, his speed and his just kind of explosive ability out there is something that does separate him. His catching is very good. He gets separation. I feel very good about that. Denzel Mims is the one who's maybe the most interesting in this draft. I think his bust ability is a very high. Like we just talked about Corey Coleman.
Right.
Baylor guy who had a ton of athleticism, big speed, and it didn't do anything. He's been on like three teams now in 4 years.
Yeah. But Mims isn't a little guy. That's the difference. He's a big guy with a lot of speed.
Mims is 6'3". Like you're talking about. He is 6'3", 207. His RAS score is huge. He's got good speed. He's a sub-4.4 guy. But the thing is, the number that really does scare me is this guy, he has the highest percentage of...
Drops,
drops and contested catches.
That's right.
With all that speed, how is he not wide open all the time? He should be uncontested catching the ball in space, especially in the Big 12.
That means he's cutting routes short.
And it could be, too, some of it, you have to see. Like, he did not play with the same quarterback skill that Jefferson was blessed to have. And going back on some of that, but the problem is he doesn't seem to be getting, like you said, you're exactly right there. He's not getting himself as open. He's either breaking it off or he's just not running it cleanly enough to get himself open.
Or he's not running good routes. Exactly. Cutting routes short or not running good routes. So
yeah, and I've seen some stuff. I mean, helps point you in the right direction. Things like fellow Ben Fennell on Twitter or Pipukowski, people like that. You see things like that where you're like, yep, that's not right. And you can just see like, there's several times, even in short games, where you're playing inside the red zone and he can't get open from that because he can't make it a crisp cut. He's rounding off things. He's massively athletic, and he put up good numbers in the Big 12. But I mean, nobody plays any defense in the Big 12.
No, they don't.
I almost just don't want to see him. His RAS score makes it so that you have to consider that this is definitely a possibility for Gutekunst. I don't know that the film matches the athleticism, though. And I don't think you want to do that in the first round. Because if you're going to do that, you may as well just go get Claypool. His RAS is even higher. And I don't think he's as likely to drop balls. I still think either of them is going to be more of a project than somebody like Justin Jefferson or Brandon Ayuk. Ayuk is a 8.47 on his RAS, which is very good, but it's going to put him down a little bit. Rieger is the other guy who interests me. I mean, you can see, dear, and I'm sorry I cut you off just now. The problem is, obviously, he's only 5'11", but his RAS score doesn't make sense to me sometimes. I mean, like, it gets killed in some of this. I mean, he's got a 42 vertical jump. He runs a 4.47. His three cone is the thing that kills him, I guess. He ran a 7.31 three cone, which is not great. You want to be under seven as a wide receiver. But, yeah, I mean, he's got a 6.06 RAS. And I think that that's going to scare off Gutekunst possibly. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I care. Like I said, Pittman, Jefferson, and Ayuk are the three guys who most interest me at this point in one, in round one.
So now we talked about this last week a little bit when you brought up Mims, and then I brought up the fact that like Jefferson and speed guys versus, you know, another big guy. So I pulled up the Lizard King, his stats, and basically Claypool is a faster version of Alan Lazard coming out of college, almost to a T. Like, it's really close. Like, he's got him by a couple inches on the vert. He's a little bit faster. He's a little bit bigger. So, I mean, I guess so. And Devontae's not a big receiver, but he's a tall receiver. And, you know, he's got that other gear, but you wouldn't call him a fast receiver. So if you were to take Claypool, would you have three just big receivers? Like, all, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, because Lazard is dang near a tight end as it is.
6'4", 227.
And I bet you Devontae Adams in a pinch could play tight end. I don't like Mims, like you said, like that drop thing. I just don't like it. I don't like the drops. I don't like the contested balls. I think Rieger is going to be gone in the top 15, to be perfectly honest. Top 20, top 15, so just cross him off the list altogether. But yeah, so there's your first round. I mean, that's my takes on it. I really like Justin Jefferson only because of a one game watching, but God, he looked good. He looked like an NFL wide receiver. And yes, you said, yes, he's got the best quarter. He had a NFL quarterback throwing him the ball. I mean, that guy's going to be an NFL quarterback week one in Joe Burrows. But, I mean, at the same time, though, man, he was running good routes, and he got to get – I mean – yeah, he's going to get you open in college, but, I mean, Jefferson was making those cornerbacks look dumb. So, yeah.
Looking back, Alan Lazard's his RAS coming out was an 8.58.
How was he not drafted? Because as soon as I picked this up, I was like, he's better than some of these people on the list in front of us right now.
I actually oddly heard that the reason he went to Iowa State is something about being closer to some people, where he just liked being back. I think it might have been something with family, too. But I think he was a much more highly recruited player, but ended up kind of getting in a place where he got less recognition, right, and ended up not being able to put up the sort of numbers. But, I mean, he ran a 4.55. He had a short shuttle of a 4.33. And then his three cone, kind of like what we're seeing here with the Rieger, it was a 7.11, so that dropped it a little bit, but he was still an 8.58.
Yeah, I mean, coming out of high school, he's from Urbandale, Iowa, which isn't that far from here, down in Janesville.
Yeah, I think he wanted to stay in state.
He wanted to stay in state. He was a four-star recruit.
Yeah.
By Scout, Rivals, and 24/7 Sports, and an 83 grade from ESPN. So, yeah, he just wanted to stay home. And, yeah, he played for the Cyclones, which... whatever. I like Iowa State. It's cool. It's a cool school, but, you know, I mean, yeah, and that's what got him in the end. He just didn't get as much. But, I mean, his stats coming out, I never actually looked at his pre-draft measurables, and they're pretty ridiculous. Like, it's like, why was this guy not – why didn't anyone, like, at least throw, like, a six-rounder at him? How did he go undrafted?
Right. So here's the next two – the next round. We'll go look at round two. There's two guys – I mean, if any of these other guys fall into round two, that'll continue pushing other talent down to the Packers, obviously. But if we're looking at round two for wide receivers, the two that are going to stick out most to me, and again, I'm guessing they fell to round two. We don't know enough. And, you know, it's going to be a weird draft in that nobody really had much of a pro day. Only a couple colleges got them in before they were shut down. They didn't have the interviews. Nobody got to bring somebody into their facility and, you know, run around, do stuff. They're just going on tape and what they already had. So nobody's learned anything particularly in
was weeks. Was that a wide receiver that had like a quote unquote pro day and was a jackass that ran like a 4.240? Who was that?
I think that was Rieger, wasn't it? Yeah, that was Jalen Rieger.
Okay, all right.
He showed the two guys clocking him. One of them had him at a 4.22, and he got a lot of eyebrows raised at him. They're like, really? I think Michael Thomas was one of the guys doing it too. He's like, really? I don't think so.
But, yeah. Oh, yeah. We talked about that last week because I brought up Joey Galloway and how Joey Galloway potentially had a 3.940.
Imagine what Dion was.
Yeah,
man. But John Hightower out of Boise State and Donovan Peoples-Jones, who many Wisconsin fans are going to know because he played at Michigan, and he had some big games, and definitely you watched him play. Massively athletic guy. Peoples-Jones is 6'2", 212. John Hightower, 6'1", and a slight fellow, 189. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Peoples-Jones actually has a RAS of 9.63. I mean, that's elite. That is an elite athletic score. And he's probably falling to the second round. If they go like tackle first and end up getting Peoples-Jones or John Hightower in the second round, I'm going to be very happy with that. I mean, I don't even care who the tackle is at this point.
I mean, Peoples-Jones can jump through the ceiling too. He's got the highest vertical jump out of any wide receiver right. on this list right now.
44 now
you took,
and a half
I mean,
inches.
You took off the top couple off this list before right. you sent it to me. So, but I mean, he can jump damn near 4 feet up in the air.
Yeah. 44 and a half inches.
With flat footed.
Yeah. And runs a 4.48.
Yeah.
These guys who can both run. Hightower did more of the actual measurable stuff at the combine. He had a 7.073 cone, so he's quick. He's got good change of direction. 20-yard shuttle, 4.21, is also one of the best here. Pittman had a better one, but not a lot of these other receivers here that we're looking at had that kind of ability. I mean, he's good in direction. He's a good route runner. I mean, he was definitely well coached at Michigan, put up good numbers against a lot of good defenses, as he had to play Wisconsin and he had to play Ohio State. And yeah, I mean, he played the big defensive schools in the conference right. this year and did well.
And with those Boise kids too, you always know that's how it went back to the John Peterson days when he pulled them on. Well, even before John Peterson, but when John Peterson brought them to glory, these are the kids that aren't going to make it at the big conference schools because there's something wrong with them. In Hightower's case, he's slight, right? But he's got, you know, a bunch of other good talents about him, you know. Boise State's built themselves around that. The kids that, you know, were for years, that's how it was back when we were just out of college too, and when Boise State was coming to the pinnacle of their, I mean, and what they built off what now is a very successful program was that all the Pac-12 schools and all the Big 12 schools that passed over these people, or they gave them what do they call that? The walk-on status,
preferred
walk-on status. And Boise State's like, we'll give you a scholarship. And you know, that's how it was. And this seems like that guy right there, like he's fast, he's got good measurables, but he's just, you know, he's a beanpole. But I mean, go back to it again. So is Devontae, you know?
Yeah. And then some of the guys we're going to look at, I mean, those would be two great second-round picks. Some of the other guys that we have here we're talking about are later-round guys who are at least interesting to look at. One, of course, is Quintez Cephas, who every Badger fan here who listens to our show is going to know. Guy with great hands. He does not have particularly elite speed. He has what we call slow feet. Right. He ran a 4.73. I mean, his pro day would have been better, I would imagine. But yeah, didn't get that. His vertical jump is not terribly impressive. It's better than a lot of guys. He ran I guess it's 38 and a half is pretty good compared to a lot of these other guys. I mean, he's better than Michael Pittman. He's better than Justin Jefferson. He's what Denzel Mims does. So he's in there. He's measurable and he's decent. His 20-yard shuttle is okay at a 4.33. 6'1", 202, he does all right. His RAS score, though, comes in as a 4.54. Again, I think what you're looking at with him is somebody like Anquan Boldin. You know he's going to catch the ball if you throw it to him. He's got great hands. He tracks the ball well in the air. I mean, yeah, he's a guy who's going to be looked at in that fifth, sixth round, I think. I mean, because he's just not fast enough. But he's going to be someone else.
We talked about this in the pre-show, too, is that, you know, I almost wonder if he's kicking himself now for not sticking one more year in college. With everything going on with COVID-19, did anything come out? Like anybody who an underclassman who gave themselves up to the draft, can they go get their eligibility back?
No, they can't.
They can't. Okay. That should have been a consideration too, because some of these guys that didn't get pro days, because I bet you he was probably betting on his pro day, because otherwise there's too many good receivers in this draft.
Yeah.
Now next year, I don't know what next year's draft class entails, but I'm guessing it's not going to have this many good wide receivers. Maybe he should have stuck around, played his senior year, and he could have been a third or fourth round pick instead. I don't know.
The thing I'll say is he's been starting for a couple of years. He obviously already lost 1 year with having to, you know, go through the ordeal he had. You're facing criminal charges and then winning at trial. And coming back and still being productive after that. What he's shown is that he's got the production thing. Mm-hmm. And what you see on tape, he's good. The only thing that's going to hold him back is he is not fast. And he's not going to get faster by playing another year. So he may as well at this point just...
I'm just saying that instead of going up against the best wide receiver draft class we've seen in the last two decades, sticking around one more year, having fun on campus, and you know, actually burying that demon another year on UW campus, and then coming out next year and probably being quite a bit higher draft pick, because he'd be halfway up this list otherwise. I mean, there's so many good wide receivers in front of him, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just a thought. I mean, what I do here, John. I announce as I admitted to Badger Noonan on Twitter. I say things and then I spend the next 5 minutes backpedaling out of what I just said.
I think that's fairly accurate. But you're self-aware, if nothing else. Some of the other guys who are interesting in this one who has a good res score. Darnell Mooney, who is a wide receiver out of Tulane. His biggest problem is he's so little.
He's a little guy.
He's like 5'10", 176 as he's measured. But he runs a 4.38, and that's something. His vertical is 37 inches. Didn't do anything else at the combine, but he's got a RAS score of around 7. He's an interesting sort of guy to look at, but, I mean, like, that's pretty little, and he played small school production, and I mean he's athletic to a degree, but
but also a small wide receiver can get away with it more these days. What's his name, who used to play for the he just played for the Redskins and the Eagles most recently?
DeShaun Jackson. Yeah, kind of thought of him on this. Not as fast.
He's maybe the best example of a small wide receiver. Steve Smith Sr. was not exactly a big dude either. There are exceptions to the rule, and if you can get open, you can get open. I mean, having a big target to throw at is awesome, but, I mean, even Donald Driver was tiny. Robert Brooks was tiny. I mean, comparatively so. And Robert Brooks, I mean, played in a day and age when you could still get leveled, as he did one time, and then career ended shortly after. But anyhow, if he's around the fourth round, just if you take a shot at him, I mean, with that kind of speed, I mean, that kid can blaze. I mean,
I don't know about fourth. I'd say maybe fifth. I'd start looking. I mean, just that size is gonna bug me, and he does move well, and the competition he went up against at Tulane is not what you see with, you know, like Pittman's numbers compared to Mooney's, and you're like, yeah, but Pittman played at USC.
Was he a number one? Can he play slot? Because, I mean, if he's
going to have
Cobb's a little guy too, but I mean, if you're running that kind of speed,
Mooney can't
slot,
get the separation if he's going to have to play on the line. He's going to have to play a Z. He's going to have to play in that slot. He's just not. He can't get that separation playing against top tier guys, which is why even with that speed, he's not going to be a first or second day is my bet. I don't see it. I've never seen anybody put him in that area. So I'd be surprised.
How high was DeSean Jackson drafted? by the way. I'm going to go look that up.
Yeah, you do that while we keep talking. One of the other guys I find interesting in this draft is Juwan Johnson. Finished his career at Oregon. Was on campus at Penn State for 4 years. Redshirted as a freshman in 2015. So his problem is, first off, I mean, he had to wait some time here. He did 4 years at Penn State, transferred to Oregon, played 1 year at Oregon. Not a ton of big production there. Last year he had 30 receptions, 467 yards. His redshirt sophomore year, though, at Penn State, he had 54 catches, 701 yards. Not a lot of touchdowns, not a lot of, you know, he never reached 1,000 yards or anything huge or 70 catches. But he's interesting in that he does present to you some qualities that look good. I mean, he runs a 4.58. He had a 6.43 cone, 33-inch vertical, and a 4.37 20-yard shuttle. But the guy is 6'4", 230. He's a late-round flyer. He has a 6.54 RAS. Not incredible, not world-beating. Just somebody to think about. He's interesting in the fact that he does have some good athleticism. He has some decent speed, and he's a large body. And he does some things. He catches well. I mean, he stayed at Penn State and Oregon for quite some time there. He had some nice years, but he was never number one. He was never the top option on any of these teams, which means he'll never be the number one on your team. So he's never going to be that guy. He's going to be somebody, if you take him in the sixth or seventh, he's going to be somebody who, you know, is going to have some kind of impact possibly. But I mean, yeah, the idea that he busts out is going to be pretty high too. So the other couple guys that we found interesting is that Rhode Island has a couple guys who are at least in here and being considered. And it's kind of rare to see two different Rhode Island receivers here. First one, Isaiah Coulter. He's got a decent RAS at a 6.71. Runs a 4.45. And then his buddy Aaron Parker is a 4.57 40. He's not athletic though. I mean, he does a sub 7 3 cone drill. He does a 4.23 20 yard shuttle. He has no explosiveness, just none, because his vertical jump is a 26.5. It seems like Aaron and I were talking beforehand. He's like, that has to be a mistake.
That's got to be a typo. There's no way he has a no way he has a 6.94 3 cone and only jumps 26 inches in the air.
He can move. He's a guy who can move, but he doesn't have the explosiveness to make other things happen. So that's why, I mean, he might just be, I mean, he's an undrafted free agent sort of guy, is my guess. I mean, he's not right. Explosive enough to make things happen, but he's fast. I mean, maybe he's interesting somewhere in a special teams thing or something. I don't know. But he's not going to push through. He's not going to break off the line, even though he's a big guy. It's crazy. He's 6'2", 209. He should, I don't know, he should be able to do
well. Better. Well, and then you said Coulter too. You know, like he's a 4.45 with a 36-inch vertical, but his shuttle is 4.62 and a 7.28 cone. That's really slow. Yeah. And then Parker is got an 40 okay cone. I don't believe that vertical number. But then his 20-yard shuttle time is right there with the best of them at 4.23. Like, they're exactly opposite. Anyways, Deshaun Watson was picked in the second round by the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, okay.
Out of UC, he was a Cal Bear and was the MVP of the 2005 Army All-American Bowl.
Where he also dove into the end zone, short of the end zone. I watched that game. It was amazing.
But to compare him to the Mooney kid, now he did play for Cal, which is a bigger school. But yeah. Coming out of college, he was 5'9", 169, 4.35, 40 time. Three cone drill was 6.82, 20-yard shuttle was 4.19, and had a vertical jump of 35 inches.
Okay.
So now, the Mooney kid's not that far off.
No, but he didn't have either. I mean, even with a lesser thing, he didn't have the type of production. Like, his best year was still only 993 yards. That year he had a 20.7 average per catch. He never caught 50 passes in a year. He's the over-the-top guy. He's the guy who's going to get that ball downfield and free things up in that offense for what they had. He's an interesting guy down the stretch, is that he can do some things for you. See if he I think he did some returning too. No, he only had one punt return his freshman year, and one kick return his sophomore year. neither was particularly impressive. In fact, I think it was a fair catch, it looks like. So, I mean, like, if he can't give you return game stuff, I mean, Mooney definitely falls into the, like, seventh round. Maybe you give him an undrafted look, you know, see what you can do with him. Just because that kind of speed is nice to look at. It's good to kick the tires on somebody like that. But, man, he's so little. It's just tough.
John? Spot check, pop quiz.
Uh-oh.
3, 2, 1. The Tulane mascot is the...
Green Wave.
Oh, God, you didn't even hesitate.
No, I know.
You can't.
Look at that little wave with a face on it and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Just checking. Checking.
I love to know those little weird things. And anyway, like actual football bowl subdivision, I know most of them, I think. Some of the newer schools, I don't know. Like,
I would have gotten that one. Rhode Island?
They're the Rams. That's FCS. No.
I actually didn't know that. So.
Because Lamar Odom, when he was in basketball, I remember him from basketball. Rhode Island's had a better basketball team than a football team.
Yeah, got it.
Anyhow, moving on to inside linebackers. Now we've kind of walked through a good half hour of wide receivers because it is, a lot of names. A lot of names we're going through. Three guys we're looking at first round sort of possibilities here for the Packers here. We're assuming that Isaiah Simmons is just gone in the first probably five picks because he's a freak of nature. Patrick Queen, the kid out of LSU we've talked about, Kenneth Murray, and Zach Bond are all possibilities in the late part of the first round in that area. All of them are fairly athletic. Oddly, Patrick Queen is the one who gets talked about the most to the Packers, mostly probably because I think if Kenneth Murray's there, I think you take him. I think he'll probably be gone first is my guess.
Mm-hmm.
That kid is a thumper. He shoots gaps and he just hits. I mean, he tackles like crazy. He plays with an anger that you just love to see. He goes through people. He takes on blocks. He can rush. He can do all the stuff, and he does it with a certain violence. I mean, like, he makes you think of Wayne Simmons, except for much less, hopefully, of an insane person off the field. Yeah.
Oh, no veiled shots at Wayne. Come on, man.
Wayne had his problems. That guy had demons. That guy had demons, and I loved watching him play, but he had problems. Kenneth Murray out of Oklahoma, 4.52 compared to Patrick Queen's 4.50 on the 40. His vertical jump's better. The other big difference here is Kenneth Murray is 6'2", 241. I mean, this is normal. He's a big, old-school kind of linebacker. He's got the same speed, though, Patrick does. He doesn't quite cover as well, but he is good, and I just love watching him tackle. I mean, what we want more than anything is to watch him go and tackle. We need to see tackling out of that linebacker position, especially in the way that they run this defense, which is linebacker is mostly free. Got to get through the wash, and you got to find your way to the ball carrier. And he does that great. Patrick Queen is also very good at those things. Neither of them are particularly full finesse, but I mean, like, Patrick Queen is 6 foot 229. He brings less thump to his hit. He's not quite as a physical character in that regard, but
that's fine. I'll take an inside linebacker that'll tackle something with a thump, but can still do pass coverage. Cause that's why we let the other guy go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Can he drop back into coverage? Okay. Maybe. I'll take that over a thump. So, well,
and this is one of the reasons why this last name that comes up here, Zach Bond, and Badgers fans are going to love hearing Zach Bond. And if his name was called, it'll be the highest selling, second highest selling jersey in Green Bay the next day. But Zach Bond has never been, he's never been the inside backer. He has not had to drop into a middle zone. I mean, he has dropped back into coverage. He has done it. And he hasn't looked bad at it. There's nothing about it that suggests he'd be terrible at it, but you don't know. You haven't seen it enough to know what you're talking about. I think they did him, if I'm remembering right from following guys like Reese Owen, Owen Reese, I'm getting his name backwards, Reese Draft on Twitter there. Owen Reese is putting out that he does do some of this in coverage, and he has done it at the Senior Bowl. He did do some of the inside backer drills, and he did do some coverage stuff and looked okay at it. And if he can do that, he's an interesting guy. He played mostly outside backer in the Wisconsin system at a 6'2", He played mostly 230. He's up to 238 at the combine. He's not as fast as either of these two guys. But I mean, 238, he's, you know, right around that same size as Kenneth Murray. Same sort of, I mean, he's a great reader. He's got great instincts. He moves very well. He's very quick, and he does tackle very well. He sees the ball well. He's got good fluid motion in pursuit. So those things you like, but the concern is always that does he drop back in coverage properly, and is he going to do it enough at a pro level to be able to be that guy that you need him to be in that middle linebacker spot? Again, I love Zach Bond. I would love to see Murray, though, more than Bond. I would take Patrick Queen over Bond at this point, too, just based on what we know. And if that first-round pick is something there, I don't like drafting what you're hoping on. I like drafting on what you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything else on there?
No, not at all.
The other backers here, there's a couple that I find kind of interesting here. Logan Wilson has become my draft crush. I like watching him move. That guy is he's basically, I mean, he's like a lesser Kenneth Murray. I mean, he's the same height and weight. He's a big guy. He runs a 4.63. He's a little slower, a little less, you know, his vertical jump's not as good. He's not as athletic, but his RAS, his RAS score is higher than Patrick Queen. He does play coverage. He's a real inside linebacker. He's out of Wyoming, and he's a really interesting cat to watch. He does everything. He's key in that defense for that team. And yeah, he's playing, you know, Mountain West competition, but still, man, for a day two pick, I would be all right with him. And I say draft crush because, I mean, what it really would like is somebody like Malik Harrison, but for a guy who's a little less well known, is going to be a little further down most draft boards, I really love watching him. He's so interesting to see. Malik Harrison is going to be another guy like Murray. He's a thumper. He's a big guy. He's 247, 6'3", 247. He still runs a 4.66. Very explosive. His three cone is under 7. He's got great side-to-side. He's got great athleticism. And he tackles. He tackles great. He tackles through the ball carry. I mean, like I said, he's a thumper. 247 coming at you with that 4.66 speed, and he reacts very quickly, and like I said, moves side to side very well and shoots gaps. I'd be very excited if we could see him second day, second round pick even. That would be something interesting to look at. Even later, there's a Joe. I forget if it's Bachy or Bachy. I remember watching him some, but I mean, mostly the thing that's interesting about him is he's a very athletic linebacker. Fun to look at. He's 6'1", 230. He's probably a third round pick, something like that. He's an interesting guy to look at in terms of what he has as an ability and what he can bring to the team. But I put him below all the guys I've already mentioned. Anything to add, Aaron?
Fair enough. No, I'm just taking in all the information, John. you're talking about people I've never seen on a video ever once. So.
Well, I mean, you've gotten to at least see some of this. I mean, you definitely watched, you know, Patrick.
Well, I watched Bond. Yeah,
you watched Harrison a couple times with Ohio State, and then they beat up Wisconsin.
Right, exactly.
Or came back. They didn't really beat up Wisconsin. They got passed.
When you told me that Wyoming was Mountain West, when you first said that, I was like, oh, they're not Big 12. I had to stop and think about that. Has Wyoming ever been in the Big 12, or were they always whack?
They were, I believe they were WAC and then Mountain West.
Okay. Does WAC still exist?
Not in football. No.
Okay. Okay. That's the Mountain West now. Okay.
Yeah. Well, they got absorbed into a couple different things. Some of the WAC went into the Sun Belt, I think, and some of it went to the Mountain West. So they got kind of pulled apart. And Idaho went back into FCS. So.
Well, there's that. So.
Always an interesting thing. By the way, Wyoming plays at War Memorial Stadium, known as the War. I've covered this before, but it's a fantastic stadium in a beautiful little town, and it's a lot of fun.
Sorry about that.
Bless you, Aaron. Last big position.
So Iowa, like the Vandals up in the Kibby Dome, they're back in FCS?
Yeah, Kibby Dome is an FCS school again. Idaho is the Vandals.
I mean, I suppose once Boise State started sucking up like all the recruits in the area, I guess that's kind of probably the side effect of that, right? I mean, because they're way up in the stovepipe too. So
yeah, they're up near Pullman though. They're not too far from Pullman, Washington. So where right. Washington State is. I don't know. They just got tired.
Next college season, we're going to have to talk about the grand march that they had between where is that between Idaho and who?
Moscow and Pullman. That's where Idaho and Washington State would walk home. It was the
I suppose do they play Washington State anymore as an FCS school?
I don't probably think they not. Have. So in quite a while, it's called the Battle of the Palouse, and the Palouse is gorgeous. It's the area there is the Palouse. So yeah.
Yes. Got it.
All right. As I started saying before, the last position kind of group that we want to talk about here is some offensive line, because there's a lot of talk more and more recently that with the way the draft seems to kind of possibly be falling, there's a good chance that offensive tackle is what the Packers do here.
Right.
One of the biggest names that's possibly going to fall is another Boise kid. Offensive tackle Ezra Cleveland, and his mm-hmm. RAS score is also one of those unbelievable sorts of ones. For an offensive tackle, his RAS is 9.93. He's 6'6", 311. He's a big guy. He's got good hands. He's got good movement. Strong kid, does well at the point of attack. I mean, he does everything well. Mm-hmm. There's a good possibility he's off the board before the Packers go.
Yeah, but, he's a big kid. 6'6", my kid. God. Yeah.
But yeah, he's one of the options. The other two that get talked about the most with the Packers are Austin Jackson. He's out of USC, and then Joshua mm-hmm. Jones, not that Joshua Jones, but the other Joshua Jones out of, Houston. He's again, these are both guys. They're both 6'5", about 220 each. Austin Jackson has the better athleticism. Joshua Jones played very well at Houston. Again, also, I mean, they've both got very good feet. They're both guys who are, I believe, clear first rounders in a pretty good offensive tackle class. So mm-hmm. those are the three to keep your eyes on as possibly falling that to that spot that might be available. There are some hints of talk that possibly Cesar Ruiz might be a guy to keep your eye on. He's a center, absolutely not a point of need for the Packers, but
no.
The Packers also don't love spending money on centers in the recent years, and it's possible that they're getting ready for the next fact that Lindsley has, I mean, they have to go at some point. So Cesar Ruiz could be a guy who could step in, maybe, you know, play some at guard and then move to center later. But I think that that's the least likely of the names here of what we're talking about first round.
Especially for a first rounder, no way. But yeah, no, there's also been, I mean, it's been shown here in the last couple of years that you can get a good center outside of the first round who will play out their rookie contract and be very good. There's been lots of good rookie centers coming out of college. The Ezra kid from Boise, first of all, great name. Ezra Cleveland. Come on. Second of all, Ezra was supposed to be my first name, and then they went with Aaron instead. Oh, completely different life if I would have been Ezra Flottam. I don't know what kind of life it would have been, but I wouldn't doubt it either. I mean, are you looking for the future of Bakhtiari or just the right tackle? Which one are you doing?
More right tackle at this point.
Or if someone falls well enough, could Bakhtiari move to right tackle?
And I don't think you want to mess with him. You want to leave your left tackle there. I mean, until if you say down the road, maybe he slows down or something and you want to pop him over and get another guy who can move to left tackle later, then I don't know. But you're looking at moving somebody into right tackle as maybe a future left tackle, but moving somebody to be your right tackle at this point is my firm belief.
Just checking.
Yeah, I mean, you could say like.
So I mean, Bakhtiari's. He's fought a couple injuries in the last couple of years, which he didn't. His first three, 4 years, he was never injured. He was always on top of it. So I mean, I don't know. I've been a little bit weary with Bakhtiari recently. So, but I mean, this last season it seemed like he was good for the most part. But at what time is he going to lose a step? So I don't know. It's an irrational fear. I should have more faith in David Bakhtiari. So,
if you want to see something more interesting, Isaiah Wilson, the guy out of you know, Georgia. He's going to be the second tackle from Georgia taken in this draft because the other guy's better. Yeah. Aaron's looking at the height weight on him again right now. He is 6'6", 350. He's not as athletic. He's almost certainly somebody who doesn't probably project to being a left tackle at any point. He's probably going to stay at right.
Yeah.
He's a mauler. You know, like he's a big kid and he pushes people around.
Yeah, he's not fast enough to be a left tackle. I mean, there's no way at 350. I mean, yeah, he's going to be a pusher, not a lateral movement guy. I mean, once the left tackles start getting up over 315, they can't move fast enough. There's like that sweet spot right there. It's like you have to be big, but you still have to be able to get that first step. 350, man. That's like asking Gilby to do a ballet dance, which he could have. Yeah. Gilbert Brown could have done a ballet dance if he wanted to.
If he came in and had a decent three-cone drill, you'd be like, oh, he's got the feet to do something. He is one of the worst three-cone drills in the whole group here. And it's just
no, it's not even close.
Of anybody we're looking at here, I think he's
slower.
Yeah. One of the worst in the class. So it's not good. He's a mauler. He's probably going to stay at right, which, you know, if that's what your plan is, that's fine. He's going to be an interesting guy. He is going to fall because he's going to be limited to staying to the right. I mean, he's big enough. You could put him at guard and just put him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you turn him out to right guard, tackle. Good night. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I mean, he's pretty tall to be a guard, but he's still, I mean, he's a mauler. He's going to be somebody in there that could be interesting, just late first, probably early second where he goes. Some of the other guys who are probably second round picks here, John Runyon, not that John Runyon, but his son. He is, of course, son of John Runyon, former NFL player, offensive tackle, former Michigan player as well, and also U.S. representative
for Michigan. New Jersey. You just found it too, didn't you? Yeah. I was like, no way.
That's so good. I didn't see the state, I guess.
Runyon's only 46. That means he only retired like 7 years ago, right?
Wasn't that terribly long ago?
So, Runyon played forever.
Yeah.
He's been in Congress now since 2011. So,
yeah, so he's been out for a little while. I remember his name though. He with the Eagles and everything. He was there for a good long time. Lucas Niang, from TCU. He's a 6'6", 215. That's kind of that's the area you were talking about. He's got the good size. He's not overweight. He didn't go combine though, and there were no pro days for him or the other guy who's interesting. Ben Bartsch, who's gotten talked about pretty commonly in the end of the second round and has been linked to possibly being somebody the Packers are interested in. He's, of course, from St. John's, so he is a Johnny, which would be great to watch. The problem is, of course, he played D3 football. But, I mean, they're talking him back into the second round. He is still big. He is 6'6", 303. And,
from St. John's, like Minnesota St. John's?
St. John's, Minnesota.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't catch the last part because I was reading up on John Runyon Sr. He was done. he finished his career in 2009 with the Chargers. Sorry.
Oh.
So he played from 96 to 2009, so good run.
Wow, anyways. That's a good one. Yeah, Ben Bartsch is interesting because, you love seeing somebody like that. He's a great story to have to go somewhere like that. He's not going to be a first-round pick. He's probably late second. Maybe third, depending on how the draft falls, which is the biggest thing that nobody can ever really predict is everything shifts when the draft falls some other way. It's like they say with anything in the military, like the plan is the first thing. You know, like as soon as there's something, goes unexpected, just throw the plan away. You need to have a plan, but, you need to know that it's just not going to work. So right. As much as we can try to say, like, this guy's a second round, this guy's a third round, you're like, Bartsch looks like he's probably a late second. He could be an early second. He could be a third. But he's an interesting player. And the problem is, like, you didn't have the combine and he wasn't able to have a pro day.
Right. But you know what? But I'll tell you what right now. He won't fall that far because the Minnesota Vikings will take him in the second round because they need an offensive tackle and they like to draft for need. That's Spielman's bit. And he's from St. John. So even though he was born in Oregon, he's one of us.
Yeah, that's fabulous, though.
He's a one-of-us Minnesotan, so they'll take him because you watch, John. You watch.
I don't doubt it. They have to pander to their fans more than a lot of fan bases do.
Oh, my God.
Because so they won't
show up. We'll keep Thielen, and we're going to trade Stephon Diggs, even though Stephon Diggs is a bigger talent, even though he's a bigger pain in the ass. And then entertain bringing in OBJ, who is a different kind of pain in the butt, but still.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyways.
I found one name, too, Aaron, that I'm going to look for in that undrafted free agency group here. And all I got a note here because he was also not invited to the combine. All of his numbers on here are pro day numbers because he was allowed to have a pro day before they shut everything down. And I'm almost a fan of his on pure name.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. There's not a properly placed letter anywhere in this name.
Evan Kizarchik. And that's E V I N, Evan.
Even.
Evan.
Even.
K S I E Z A R C Z Y K.
That's a good Bohemian name right there, straight out of Czech Republic.
Yeah, I was like, that sounds like home. But yeah, played at
that
Buffalo.
That sounds like all the last names on every single tombstone where my grandpa's buried.
Just like walking around Point.
I don't see a vowel anywhere in this cemetery. What's going on?
Yeah, my guess
why are C and Z together so often here?
My guess is that like two or three generations ago, that Z had like a little swoosh underneath it or a dot above it or something. Yes. Something else. It's fabulous.
Or two or three generations ago, they couldn't read or write, so it didn't matter. Because they were living, they were gypsies living in a wagon. Sorry. Yeah.
He's 6'6", 310. He played at Buffalo. He's not a bad. These are again pro day numbers, which are take it for what they are. His bench was 26 reps, vertical jump 26 inches, which isn't better than any of the guys we mentioned who had numbers.
Right.
So yeah.
And so how did they determine a RAS for him if
they're using pro day numbers? What they would ideally do for Raz is they would get combine numbers and pro day numbers and then create numbers based off of the two of them because it gives it a better actual score. So in some part of this, the fact that we had, you know, some combine but nothing else probably affects what the Raz is going to should have been. So it's going to be less accurate because there are less data points to be able entered into the Raz configuration. Okay. So Kizarchik didn't have the combine numbers, but he does have pro day numbers. So his RAS comes out to an 8.09, which is actually better than Joshua Jones and better than Isaiah Wilson. Isaiah Wilson, of course, being gigantic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, an 8.09 is pretty decent. It's not as good as John Runyon. But, yeah, Kizarchik's not going to get drafted, though. He was second team All-MAC this last year at tackle. He's a right tackle. He doesn't have the feet to play left. He's a guy who blocks well when he's around you, but you can get past him or you can outrun him. He's got to be able to keep in front of people. He doesn't have the feet to do it. But he's an interesting cat, and he seems to be athletic enough. Maybe he could get better coaching or maybe get something worked out, and he could be more interesting down the road. But he's an undrafted guy for sure, and maybe just somebody you keep around on a practice squad for a year or two and see if he does something.
You know, that's you just mentioned something that's key with any of these guys that come out, you know, any of the people that, you know, would any other team have made Tom Brady the person he was if he wasn't drafted by Bill Belichick? Doubtful.
No, unless somebody got hurt. I mean, like what happened with Romo.
I'm just saying it, like any late, you know, any of these people that are like, they've got some good things. It depends upon how their coaching goes. And that's what they were talking about on the Cape Fan Morning Show this morning too, was that, you know, you don't know, you know, like there's been good players drafted into bad situations that their careers were ruined. And then Mike Heller was talking earlier today too about Eddie Ivory that the Packers drafted back in the 80s.
Yeah, Eddie Lee Ivory, yeah.
Eddie Lee Ivory was going to be the next big thing in the NFL. First game in the NFL, he tore up his knee on that old crappy turf at Soldier Field, and he was never the same again. Like, you just don't know. Like, there are people, like, to be a Hall of Famer, everything has to go right. I mean, yeah. Gale Sayers is one of the few that got to get into the Hall of Fame on a very short career, you know, because of what he got done in such a short amount of time. But otherwise, I mean, you have to be good for a long time, and you have to avoid a lot of stuff. And I mean, but that's just one of those things too. It's like you said with this Evan Kaczarczyk, you know. Anyhow, you know, or any of these people that are like later round ones that you've picked out like that, like if they just get onto the right team with the right coach, who knows? Yeah. You know, like yeah. I mean, the Packers 2010 team. What was the linebacker? He went to the Colts after us. Zombo.
Oh yeah, Frank Zombo.
Do you remember how important Zombo was down the stretch?
They went to the Chiefs. Yeah.
Yeah, and how important Zombo was, and how he went to the Colts, I thought.
But well, he ended up with the Chiefs eventually, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean how important Zombo was as an undrafted outside linebacker, because Kevin Green was in his head and making him do things. And how important, I mean, there were so many people. There were 15 – people don't remember that 2010 Packers team was there were so many – people on the IR at the end of the year, to include Jermichael Finley.
Yeah, just everybody
and
was.
It was, and if Starks would have shown up as a running back, Starks was the MVP of the playoff run. I don't care what anybody says, because if Starks wouldn't have shown up, they wouldn't have gotten anywhere. Like, Starks was amazing. But, you know, there you go. There's a fifth-round draft pick. Zombo was undrafted. It has a lot to do with the coaching, too. Like, I mean, and that's how it is. Like, you can get it out of these guys, but... There you go. Anyways, weird. All right. I don't know where that came from. Good rant, Aaron.
The last couple of things we have mentioned as we wrap everything up here today is friend of the podcast, Andy Herman, again, at Andy Herman NFL, gave a list of players he's almost certain will be somewhere in that first round pick for the Packers. The list is Jordan Love, Brandon Ayuk, Denzel Mims, Michael Pittman Jr., Chase Claypool, Austin Jackson, Ezra Cleveland, Zach Bond, and AJ Terrell. Only two of those are guys we didn't talk about today, because I really, really hope they don't go after Jordan Love. Not because I don't think the Packers should draft a first round quarterback, because if Tua falls, I'm fine with that. I don't think Jordan Love's that good. I think he's a decent looking guy from Utah State, and I don't really care. AJ Terrell would be interesting, only because Goody's basically only drafted cornerbacks and, you know, defensive backs.
Right.
And getting the Clemson cornerback, who's very interesting. 4'4", 240. Good. Seven Cohen is decent, all that. And he played very well on a very good team, had a good couple games there, too, down the stretch. He's a good player. It'd be interesting if he came there. It'd be something very, very interesting, because it's very much not a position of need, but it would be interesting to see that. I'll just say interesting again, because, you know, it's interesting. The three he said he believes it'll come down to is Jordan Love, Austin Jackson, and Ezra Cleveland. If that's the case, I'm still fine with that, because if they could do that and somehow get, you know, Hightower or Peoples-Jones in the second round, fabulous. But that's Andy Herman, who we love, and we're trying to get him back on. He'll be back hopefully June or July to kind of talk about how things are going and get us ready for the season. Obviously, this is a massively busy time for him, though. The last couple of things I'll say that are non-Packer related. Bulls documentary is out, and I don't care. Aaron, do you care?
Nobody cares. No, I don't. He People pushed off. Twitter. Nobody cares. Anybody who was around at that time knows Jordan was a jerk. He's always been a jerk. He's the best player of all time, but whatever. And the only reason why they were so good was because Scottie Pippen was stuck in a terrible contract where he was getting paid $2 million a year during that whole six-year run, and Michael Jordan was making $30 million a year. So there.
Yeah. The team was great. I hated watching him because I rooted for the Bucks, and I didn't care to watch Jordan win anything. I'm not saying he's not great. I mean, corporate America shoved Jordan down all of our throats for every minute of like the late 80s and 90s. There's nothing we don't have. If you ordered Sports Illustrated at any point in like the 80s or early 90s, they sent you the video about Michael Jordan's life. And the biggest fun part was, of course, giant chunks of our mythology that aren't true. So I don't need to hear anything more. There's nothing left to be said about Michael Jordan. There just isn't, and I don't care.
Yeah, Michael Jordan's nothing without Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen got screwed. Michael Jordan threatened to kill numerous teammates and other players.
And gave the worst Hall of Fame speech history.
Giant jerk. Is a gambling addict nowadays, was back then was too. Bad. He was an amazing talent, but he was a horrible human being.
And is a horrible
human being. I don't care what anybody says. You tell me he's the greatest player of all time in the NBA? Yeah, I'll say, yes, you are correct.
Or will.
But this whole thing, like this new generation, like Michael Jordan was a terrible. I mean, it'd be like me talking about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's career. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's career was done when I was 7. I don't even remember, but like a lot of people like talking about Jordan's career nowadays that were born after 1998, you weren't even around for it. The guy was a jerk. There's a reason why the Pistons went after him. I mean, there's a reason why Reggie Miller hated him. There's a reason why him and Charles Barkley don't talk anymore.
Yeah.
The guy's a jerk.
Yeah, well, he's terrible.
I mean, he's a sociopath, but you have to be that level of just insanely driven for a guy his size to be as good as he was. It's a sociopathic drive, and nobody should be surprised by this. Document done.
The other fun things to remember is 10 years ago, 10 years ago Saturday is the day that Greg Jennings became more famous for the fact that he played a game in Madden with a broken leg than anything he actually did. Because the Greg Jennings video, the broken leg game, came out 10 years ago from Saturday. So it's a fun little thing to remember. Also, there's a story this week that there were some fake Wonderlic scores reported and leaked to the media, and the media reported them and put them out. And
the NFL should just stop doing Wonderlic. It's stupid. Nobody cares.
As I tweeted, like Tua and Herbert were among the guys whose fake scores were leaked and printed. And the most interesting point is that I realized and read the story about the fake Wonderlic well before I ever bothered to know what their Wonderlics were, because I don't care.
Nobody cares. Fitzmagic is the only quarterback ever. He's got the highest score ever for a quarterback, and that's 48.
It only matters if you fail. It only matters if you're terrible at it, like Vince Young.
Fitzmagic had a 48. Fitzmagic has had a nice career, especially considering where he came from, right?
He is the most touchdowns of anyone. Hall of
Fame quarterbacks, Jim Kelly and Dan Marino, both scored 15s. And Lamar Jackson, who just won the MVP last year, got a 13. Nobody cares. The only person who ever got a perfect score was a punter. So stuff it. Yeah. Like, I don't care about and not only that, in this PC age where we're not supposed to shame people for being dumb, how on earth are we releasing Wonderlic scores? I mean, or leaking them? Literally, it's garbage. Like, it's garbage. I don't like it at all. Sorry. I don't like this fixation on the Wonderlic. Like, everyone has determined that it's garbage, but it just shows how much power the NFL has over keeping your minds on everything all the time. Like, nobody actually really cares about the Wonderlic, do they?
I don't think so. I don't know.
It's literally like a sports radio podcast talking point for like 2 weeks, and then nobody even remembers after the draft.
And we're only talking about it because some fake ones were leaked, because we don't care. Anyhow, that's all we've got this week. And by all we've got, I mean we went way over time.
Here's something I don't care about. I'm going to talk about it for 5 minutes.
Nah, we didn't go five. Anyhow, though, thank you again, everybody, for joining us again this wonderful week, including all of our wonderful friends who listen to us apparently in Austria and the Netherlands, and in the other places it shows us on Podbean as other, which it doesn't tell us what that means. It could just show us those countries, but it doesn't. Thank you again. Remember, you can follow the podcast again on Twitter at Scotty Johnny Pod. You can follow me at Not So Humble Host, and you can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. You can always find our show and any number of places, including iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and wherever else you find podcasts. Remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. The reviews are very important and do help other people find the show. So we greatly appreciate your 5-star reviews and your actual written reviews for us so we can see those. And remember, of course, don't go on to town and don't go on the go. But whatever does happen, it is always on Wisconsin.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.